One-way communication yet exists in many organizations and for many of the same reasons as described above. Although management recognizes that prescribed information must flow downward and upward, managers may not be convinced that two-way communication should be encouraged. Why do you feel managers are not convinced for two-way communication to happen? To a great extent, very often managers may feel what they're doing is correct. To a great extent, they do not want any discussion on this topic since they feel they've done the best and all the possible research. To a great extent, they feel instructions have to be followed, not told to them by anybody else. And to a great extent, it's also because they always feel what they're doing is correct. So when someone shares an idea or view with you as a manager, you ideally may feel intimidated. See, there are various aspects to this. You may feel intimidated as a manager. You may feel what you're doing is the best. You may feel you don't need to listen to anybody's views or ideas. You may feel that what you have decided is the best. For example, to what extent is a subordinate free to communicate to his superior that he understands or does not understand a message? Is it possible for him to question the superior, ask for clarifications, suggest modifications to instructions he has received? Now, when you talk ideally of these kind of aspects from the subordinate's point of view, a subordinate ideally should have the freedom to get his doubts clear. A subordinate should have the freedom to understand certain aspects. A subordinate should have the freedom, ideally, to focus on getting all the information from the person at top management, especially if there's some confusion. But in one-way communication, this ideally is not possible. Or can a junior transmit unsolicited messages to his superior, which are not prescribed by the rules? Norms, policies, rules, regulations have to be followed. It is never possible for a junior, or it can never be possible for a subordinate, to communicate any information to the person at top management which may be against the norms and policies of an organization. To what extent does a one-way rule of direction affect the efficiency of communication in an organization, in addition to the morale and motivation of subordinates? It will definitely affect the motivational level of the subordinates. It may make the subordinates feel that what is the purpose of them working here when ideally there is no two-way communication. In any organization, give and take of information, strategic planning, working towards the betterment of the organization is always through a team. The ability to interact, understand perceptions, understand various ideas, views, can only be possible with two-way communication. The ability to take suggestions, ideas from one and all, and finally do what you wish to as a person at top management, can also make it easier for both, that means the superior and subordinate. These are not merely procedural matters, but include questions about the organizational climate. That means, is there a conducive environment as far as work is concerned? Well, if it's one-way communication, chances of having a conducive environment seem minimal. Because for a conducive environment in any organization, two-way communication is necessary. Psychological atmosphere. It does take a toll on your mind if you as a subordinate are not really given a chance to interact effectively, or you as a subordinate are not given that chance to ideally express what you really wish to. At times you may even feel a sense of failure since you're not given a chance to express your thought processes. Several experiments conducted over a period of time arrived at these following conclusions. One-way communication is faster since only information is transferred. A reason It is common in combat-ready military organization where speed is crucial for survival. So you have a person who's communicating, giving information, not expecting any sort of interaction from the others, and giving information at his convenience in a short span of time and expects others to follow it. Two-way communication is more accurate. Why? A reason: it is used by all competitive organizations. Traditional organizations relying upon downward communication along the organization charts are finding it difficult to meet competition and survive. People who follow one-way communication will definitely face stiff competition from the others because they're just not willing to have an open mind. They're not willing to accept the fact that they ideally need any ideas, views, suggestions from the others. They feel they're the best as far as communicating effectively is concerned. Receivers are surer of themselves and make more correct judgments of how right or wrong they are in two-way system. Build confidence and team spirit, so essential for organizations to prosper on all fronts. The moment there's two-way communication, for example, if I'm communicating to my subordinate, I will always be alert and aware as to what I'm saying. All the more, because if I make a mistake, I will definitely be corrected by my subordinate. Depending, of course, to a great extent, the kind of rapport we have, but then too. So we need to understand that when it's two-way, the accuracy is higher. When it's two-way, ideas may flow. When it's two-way, there would be more concept of team spirit and cohesion in the organization. And to survive in a competitive world, two-way communication would make life easier. The sender feels psychologically under attack in two-way system because the receiver picks up his mistakes and oversights and points them out to him. I just discussed. As a result, each manager is alert, consults his juniors before taking business decisions. The two-way method is relatively noisier. Has to be, because you would have, say, with your team, right? You want to discuss with your team as to what changes can be made in the organization to have free flow of communication. Now, the various suggestions which come up, a lot of people having their ideas, views, some ideas may be appealing, some ideas may not be appealing. Some of them suggest that they have regular training sessions. Some of them suggest that they have a one-to-one interaction with the other. Some of them suggest that, you know, once in few months, ideally, spend some time probably having any activity such as meditation or playing a sport together. This would probably ease out each other's behavior. So various aspects to it. The two-way method is relatively noisier and looks more disorderly. The one-way, on the other hand, appears neat and efficient. Because if it's me communicating, I've done my bit, I've communicated. There's no scope of anybody telling me anything. So on that front, they're saying it's neat. That means no scope for confusion, no difficulty in what others think, because I'm not concerned with what others think or feel when it's one way. It has its own discipline, and yes, what I put forward has to be followed. So in a way, it's more effective, but in the long run, it is known that in today's competitive world, one-way communication will not ideally be effective. Thus, if speed is necessary, if business-like appearance is important, if a manager does not want his mistakes recognized, and if he wants to protect his power, then one-way communication seems preferable. Yes, to a great extent, not necessary, as we're saying, to a great extent, if a person feels intimidated or threatened by his teammates, then he may feel one-way communication is ideally best. Nobody has the power to challenge me or my words. So the person does not feel threatened when it is one-way communication. In contrast, if the manager wants to get his message across, or if he is concerned about the receiver's feeling that they are participating and making a contribution, the two-way system is better. So somewhere, you ideally feel that I want to know what the receiver feels out here as far as this decision is taken. I want to know what my team members feel. I want to understand each one's thought process. So all those aspects are then effective for two-way communication. Downward communication. Communication that flows from a higher level in an organization to a lower level is called downward communication. So you're going down the steps. So from the highest step to the lowest step. So top management to subordinates. In other words, communication from superiors to subordinates in a chain of command is downward communication. This communication flow is used by managers to transmit work-related information to the employees at lower levels. Employees require this information for performing their jobs and for meeting the expectations of the managers. Downward communication is used by managers for the following purpose. So more to do with giving instructions, delegating tasks, being authoritative, expectations in terms of what you ideally want your subordinates to achieve for your organization. And yes, being assertive and maybe even aggressive at times, as far as the people at top management are concerned, for the task to get done effectively. Downward communication. Provide feedback on employee performance, right? Providing feedback, giving job instructions, telling the team as to how they should go about it. When you talk of feedback, it is related to an event or an individual based on his performance, say for a particular project, and what, after that feedback is given, what do you expect in the future? So for example, if there is Mr. Thomas in a team and he is the team leader, and there are four people in his team working on a project. So Mr. Thomas puts forward that it was pretty much disappointing for him because this time his team members were not very cooperative. So this is the feedback of his team members. Mr. Thomas gives this kind of feedback to the director. So it is linked to the people in that team, to that project. Providing a complete understanding of the employee's job. What needs to be done, how they should go about it, what is expected, what should be achieved. Communicating the organization's mission and vision to the employees, very, very important. What is it in terms of long-term goals? What is the vision there? Where do you see yourself as an organization in terms of growth? Highlighting the areas requiring employees' attention and immediate action. Right? Some tasks have to be done immediately, or some tasks require immediate attention. In order to have effective and error-free downward communication, managers must specify communication objectives. Juniors immediately know what the manager wants to convey and get into the receptive mode. That means start, you know, getting into the activity immediately and focusing and achieving. Both sender and receiver stay focused on the end results to be achieved. What matters most is that the results have to be achieved. Ensure that the message is accurate, specific, and clear. Juniors at lower levels may not have desired level of understanding and may misunderstand the content. That is why it is absolutely important for people at top management to explain clearly, explain in the simplest of words. For example, you as a director may have 25 years work experience and you're giving instructions to a subordinate who's a fresher, who barely has 1 month work experience. So the way the instructions are put forward to him, explained in a clear manner, explained in a manner whereby it's easy for him to pick up and implement. So pick up the points, retain, implement. That means that instruction or those instructions get you to move ahead and you implement it into action. What are the characteristics? Utilize the best communication technique to convey the message to the receivers in the right form acceptable to them, the one with which they are familiar. There should not be any distortions in the message during the transmission of the receivers. Okay? During the transmission to the receivers. If the instruction calls for a simple task, it can be issued orally, but for other than simple task, all instructions better be provided in writing. That serves as a proof that gets easy for the person to understand. It can also have clarity in terms of words. So letters circulated to, put forward to employees. When you talk of circulations, group meetings, all these are examples of downward communication. Now, education and training. Downward communication is commonly used by management for education and training of the workforce. Education is the development of general and special abilities of the mind. Training is practical education or practice, usually under supervision in some skill. Say your company ideally has launched a new product. You have your marketing team. So first, ideally, they are given effective training for the gadget maybe, so that when they have to ideally go in terms and make others understand the utility of the product, as to how it functions, they themselves are clear with every aspect of the gadget. Or probably training your staff, giving them probably a non-technical person is giving instructions to ideally a team. And when you talk of a non-technical person, giving instructions on certain fronts as to how effectively they can deal with a technical audience. So you have a non-technical person, you have a technical person. Both of them get together. They're explaining the team as to how they should deal with the audience or the masses or the customers for a particular product. How they handle the customers effectively. Okay? So when you talk ideally, or you're talking of customer feedback, so how do you train them effectively so that they handle the queries appropriately? For technical training, in-house resources are generally employed by the management. On-the-job training is provided to apprentices and freshers. So people who are just working in terms of, for a few months, someone who's a fresher, someone who's on probation. So certain skills need to be imparted. When new employees are placed on the job, the supervisor or a senior employee in the department watches, supervises, assists, and corrects the employees till they learn their jobs. Most of the training is informal, and the amount of instruction needed depends on the complexity of the job and capacity of the employees to learn. So, for example, someone is learning MIS, Management in Information Systems. This would involve coding. So first they need to learn. Then ideally you would have an individual probably in the organization who would also give you some training on that aspect. Impatience or lack of skill in instructing. That is why I gave you the example in the previous slide. Even if a technical person is explaining to a non-technical audience, the non-technical person too has a skill to understand that information and let the audience feel comfortable, saying that he too is having no information or knowledge as far as the technicalities are concerned. When training for social skills, outside expert consultants are often employed by most organizations, and specific time-bound training sessions are given. So you could have discussions, conferences, training sessions. Subjects like hygiene, safety, quality, pollution, noise mitigants, conservation of environment, cost reduction, productivity improvement appear in such training exercise. It could be from one to any other aspect. That means you talk of quality of the product, You talk of packaging, marketing, pricing. You talk of basic aspects such as environment, where you're focusing on CSR. So when you talk of pollution, noise emissions, all this comes under probably CSR, corporate social responsibility. So when you talk of these aspects, you're focusing on giving the team instructions based on any one of these, few of these, or maybe all of these, depending on what you want from the team in terms of expectations. Customer education has acquired priority lately. Customers who buy consumer durables need training in using the most effectively. I just give you an example of the gadget, right? Companies selling products like photocopy machines, computers, sewing machines, cellular phones arrange for training of buyers. User manuals provide instructions on using the product. It makes life easier when we have a manual. And some educated information about companies' policies and procedures. Such is downward communication. Supervisors provide advice on matters related to work on or personal matters if the relationship permits. So we're talking now on advice and counseling. It seems that in today's day and age, when actually in one organization, people try to figure out that what is the root cause of stress. Many of them said could be relationship problems. Many of them said concerns about the financial status. Many of them said parental concern. Probably one of them is going to become a parent. So you could have anxiety and stress related to any of these aspects. So when we talk ideally for counseling, what is most important? That your company has a counseling center. That would probably help. If your company has a counseling center, the information is confidential. At times, a person at top management may serve as a counselor too. But it is noticed in one of the organizations that having a separate counseling center through the company has made it easier for a lot of people to disclose what they really feel. When it was asked to them, why do they need to talk to an outsider and not somebody who is ideally close to them? Many of them said it was more about trust. It's easier to speak to a counselor whom you can trust than someone whom you know and may break your trust. But very often in organizations, we do realize that a person at top management does counseling for his subordinates. For example, you have a terminally ill patient at home. You find it difficult to cope with work and your day-to-day life, or the death of a loved one. How do you deal with this? You feel it is better to talk to somebody at top management, tell them how you feel. Very often you have not been coming since the last few weeks, which was never the case otherwise. So some sort of counseling and advice will definitely help. A supervisor may find it necessary to advise an errant employee on how to be more professional and productive. That means get the results. Such advice is effective when provided through face-to-face or oral communication in a confidential manner. Very important, confidential manner. Supervisors need tact, skill, and sympathy to be able to provide useful advice, especially when the junior person is in a high position or quite experienced, right? Because whom are you interacting with? What is his experience? What is his designation as a junior? Is he heading a team? Those aspects are important. And of course, when you're talking in terms of tact and skill, communicating without being offensive, communicating whereby you are empathizing, you are able to put yourself in the other person's place. It is extremely crucial. Now, for disciplinary action, when we talk that there is discipline which is expected by the people at top management from the subordinates. I guess discipline on any front in an organization is compulsory, it's mandatory. When all reconciliatory alternatives for correcting and improving employee behavior fail, organizations have to resort to disciplinary action. Now, say for example, if there is someone who is ideally responsible for stealing the data, then of course some action needs to be taken. Integrity is one of the most important aspects for any individual who works in an organization. So we give this example of data theft. So when there is data theft, you have to take action against that individual. In view of the critical nature of the process, communication here has always to be in writing. Writing, that means sending an email. It serves definitely as a proof. And of course, when we send an email, depending on who else needs to know, that means keeping a few people in the loop, you CC it to a few people. The process starts with a warning letter, show cause notice, suspension, and at the worst, dismissal of the employee. Depending on the kind of activity done by you, which is against the norms of the organization, which is ideally considered unethical in terms of behavior. When employees are unionized, their union has to be involved in communication. Then it is the union who takes charge in terms of discussion and is a link between the people in that team and the top management. Opportunities have to be offered to employees to defend themselves so that disciplinary action is taken only on just grounds. That means you take action on grounds which are required. Upward communication. We climb up the steps. When we climb up the steps, what does it mean ideally? We are going from step 1 to step 2 to step 3 to step 4. That means from subordinate to top management. Even though most of the communication in an organization is from seniors in the organization to juniors, as observed, some communication also moves from lower levels to upper level. In fact, progressive organizations encourage flow of communication upward to the management. It is known that if people at lower level get a chance to communicate to the people at top management, there is definitely a difference in terms of the output. Upward communication is the information going from subordinates to the supervisor or manager. The information could be reports, which are submitted from subordinates to top management, status complaints, if you have a complaint against a colleague who is absolutely not involved in any activity, though you're supposed to work as a team for that marketing activity. Or rumors, which could be grapevine, that means rumors or gossip in the organization. Concerns, some aspect is worrying you as to what will happen in the future if you say probably get to know that there's a recession and few of you all will be asked to leave. So it becomes a concern. If there is a rumor that a person who's worked for 20 years has suddenly decided to leave, so it could become a topic or a discussion or a rumor. It could be any of them. Questions and information. So all these are forms of upward communication. I don't want any yes men around me. I want everyone to tell me the truth, even if it costs him his job. Samuel Goldwyn. There are some people in an organization who say a yes for everything with whatever the people at top management say. In this case, you have a person at top management saying that I want people to give me facts. I want people to communicate with me. I want people to share with me with what is happening. And he has made it so clear that even if it costs you a job, you've got to tell me the facts. I want reality here. So that is what is said. One-time oral or written reports. In your working life, one of your goals may be to give reports that are complete, clear and useful. Reports that make you look competent and professional. Reports, what are reports? Logical data of facts, figures, details. For example, your director tells you to prepare a reply. For example, if your director says to prepare a report for the decline in the sales of goods. So you prepare a report that means all the details as to what is the reason for the sales in goods, in which year, say 2013-14, why, what can be done to increase the sales, what are the other effective solutions to this. So a report prepared by a subordinate and submitted to the people or the person at top management. The key to a good report, whether it is verbal or written, is that it addresses the concerns of the people receiving the report. Of course, the director is wondering, why is there a decline in the sales of goods? So that's what they're saying here. It addresses the concerns of the people receiving the report. You can have the greatest presentation and content, but if the report does not answer the specific questions and concerns of your readers or audience, the report will be lacking. The best way to ensure your report is on track is to have a preliminary discussion with your manager. That means discuss what is expected, what do you want, how do you want us to put forward the information, what exactly should we look for, so that you feel you've got all the correct aspects to it. This should take place preferably halfway between the start and completion of the report to ensure that you have understood the concerns of the people asking for the report. What do we mean by this? When we start a report, there's infancy stage, middle stage, final stage. Maybe they're saying to an extent, during the middle stage, you again have a discussion with the people who've asked you to prepare a report. That means with the people who are at top management. Why? Because you want to keep them in the loop as to what you've prepared so far. What are their expectations? Is it on the same page? That means what they've asked for and what you've prepared. Is it the same? The conversation needs to be at the halfway point, because at the start, you may not have enough insight to ask the right questions and your boss may not have all the information to answer them. So the middle stage, as far as preparing a report is concerned, is very crucial. Whenever any rare incident happens during normal working hours, for example, fire, theft, accident or breakdown, you're required to submit a first information report to your supervisor and heads of concerned departments. The HR department will look into this after you submit the report. Whatever details are put forward, the HR department ideally will effectively understand the concerns. This report is based on your investigation into the incident. Such report states in detail what happened, when, how was it noticed, by whom, the extent of damage caused, and what steps were taken to immediately contain the damage to persons and property. This report is prepared and written by an individual. So giving all the possible details, if there was a theft, when do you think it happened? So you will see you left office at 7:30, you were the last one to leave. So anytime after 7:30 and next morning 9, what do you think is ideally not found or what is really taken away? So all aspects to it. Subsequently, an investigation report has to be prepared, usually by a group or committee of concerned, knowledgeable people for submission to the management so that required corrective action is arranged. When we say investigation report, what all details have you got? What information have you got which is leading you to come up with an effective solution and catch the culprit? So, detailed aspects to it. This report provides facts about the incident, probable causes, and recommendations on corrective action. So, if we take decline in the sales of goods, what can be done to increase our sales? Are we competing effectively with the competitors? Are we giving effective deals? Maybe that's why competitors are doing better. Or is it the quality in terms of the product? This report is written and approved by a group. So accident, for example, on product line so-and-so, right? So that's what they are saying. Who are the individuals involved, the date, time,